Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. As always, I thank you for spending a little bit of your day with me. Hopefully, we are bringing and will continue to bring exciting and innovative guests in the healthcare space. And so I know today's guest is certainly one of those people. Mitch Quinn, who is with Cori OED. Mitch and I met in October at a healthcare innovation summit down in Houston. And I walked in, and you know, as is the case with most conferences, there are folks lined up on the walls. And so you start walking around and looking at things that might be of interest to you. Well, their booth was the first one I saw, and I went straight to it because they are providing a solution for us in the hospital world that has really confounded us for a long time. You know, they're touching on the throughput issues in the ED, which, you know, I dealt with on a daily basis, my colleagues deal with on a daily basis. And so I think Mitch's innovative solution to that would be something of interest to everyone. So Mitch, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thanks, Kevin. I was thinking back to healthcare innovation and just was recalling the meeting there. So yeah, the Corio was really born out of this recognition of how complex the workflows are, and both for transitions from the emergency department into inpatient care and back out of the emergency department to home. And, you know, we saw an opportunity whereby coordinating the services around the anticipated dispositions, we felt that we could convey the disposition intuition that is usually developed pretty early on in an ED encounter by the experienced physicians, but we could scale that up in a way that could be trusted and could be used hospital-wide to get some of that work started in a proactive manner, sort of smoothing out the transitions of care, making them execute more effectively. So,
okay. Well, you know, I know in past EDs that I've overseen, that transition is always really dicey because, you know, there are multi factors that delay that transition, whether it be an ED that's overrun, which is becoming more and more common these days because of the utilization of EDs for primary care purposes. But also just for, you know, staffing issues, you know, there may be just not enough nurses, not enough ED physicians to be able to process those patients, you know, effectively. And then, of course, you know, one of the other big issues is the overcrowding of hospitals in general these days and not having the bed space upstairs. And so, you know, the ED throughput issue and the ED transition is just one piece of this entire puzzle. But I think what Corio's developed, and I definitely want you to expound upon this, is a way to shave time off in areas that really can be addressed fairly quickly. You know, and that areas that are outside the ED, like, you know, like lab services, like radiology, like, you know, transport time upstairs. And so, you know, talk a little bit about how you use the ED information and demographics of the area to really provide a better learning experience and a better throughput experience for the ED leaders.
Right. You know, there are different activation points along a patient's encounter that you can activate on and streamline some of those workflows if you know that a patient is going to require inpatient care. You know, You mentioned things like radiology to rule out service or to rule out out surgical admissions versus medical, and can you accelerate those to find out where that patient is going to wind up? The other things to identify bed needs are like special bed requirements, like isolation screening and things like that. You can start some of those early on, so that you're not waiting for those when the workup is complete and the you've got an encounter diagnosis ready to go and ready to do that admission. So that all of those things can benefit from earlier signals of an admission. So while the working diagnosis becomes the encounter diagnosis, and you make it through that process, some of the other services can be activated in parallel while that work is being done. Now, it is important to acknowledge that this sensitivity towards any sort of wasted work or false positives, and that's why with Corio, we focus only on the ones that are the most certain admissions before we activate any work, or the most certain discharges before we activate that side of things as well. And so we differ a little bit because we want to make sure we only say things about those very certain ones. We're looking more at the not the needle in the haystack, which is what many AI products pride themselves on. We found something that no human could possibly, anticipate, and oh, this is interesting, curious. We focus on, getting the ones that everybody aligns on, the mundane, the unsurprising ones, early, and fast tracking those through the process, almost like a virtual fast track, a type of a signal that you can apply in the emergency department operations and coordinating.
Okay, so walk me and my audience through the process of how do you create this model that can be actionable by the ED leadership?
Sure. So one of the important things is that we train the model on each hospital's own data. We don't rely upon some one size fits all model that may have been trained on a patient population and a hospital procedures that are very different from where they're put into play. So before we go into a hospital, we retrain that model on their historical data to make sure that it's perfectly tailored to their environment. And the way we do that is by looking at all of the emergency department encounters and all of the, sort of the digital exhaust that is part of care. And we train the model to anticipate in that hospital setting which of the admissions were accepted and went upstairs, right? And so give the ED a signal of this person is on track to be admitted, that there was an accepted admission on the hospital side of things. So it can give them a little bit of confidence there, is that because that is the thing to train on. And so we look at all of their prior encounters. We look at, as deep of a history as we're able to obtain by plugging into their EHR and pulling out that data into our environment to train the model for that hospital. And so that's sort of the first step, right? And we first see how well the model performs, both in terms of accuracy and how many of the admissions or discharges it's able to anticipate with that very high standard for accuracy. And then we dig one level deeper to see how much lead time we can provide them over their workup being completed, right? We measure that. And in the hospital we're deployed at, we find that we can anticipate that decision to admit or the workup being finished by about 2.5 hours with over 90 to 95% accuracy. And so that gives you confidence for, okay, the model is working well in this setting. And then what we do is we build the alignment with the ED physicians and the hospitalists by walking them through specific encounters that they are familiar with, because we have their hospital's data, and we can walk them through a step-by-step timeline showing how the model performed at each point in time, like what it was seeing, that digital exhaust of care delivery, and how it was, zeroing in on a disposition that it's anticipating. And that's important because while this is not necessarily a physician-facing tool, clinical decision support, we need their trust that it is conveying their intuition about how that patient will ultimately be, what their disposition ultimately will be.
Okay. Well, and that was my next question, is because I'm wondering what kind of pushback are you getting from ED physicians saying that basically your AI model is practicing medicine, because the ED docs, and answer that first, and then I have a follow-up.
Yeah, so no, that's great. We're not trying to practice medicine by any stretch of the. We think of it as something that as a tool that mimics the performance, mimics the behaviors of medicine as it is practiced, and the disposition decisions in your setting, right? So given this is your population, looks like this patient is going to be admitted based on all the prior history. So it's really more of a like a digital twinning aspect, and it takes the most certain ones off of the at the high end of precision. We're not adjudicating or in trying to influence that clinical decision making in any way. But it can sometimes serve as a reminder. Sometimes the workup gets completed earlier when you see, oh yeah, I can get that patient going, and I'll go ahead and submit the decision to admit, because it's pretty much tied up.
Okay. Well, and I think another benefit of this too is the fact that you've got a lot of veteran ED docs that have been in a hospital maybe 15, 20 years, and they know the population pretty well. But in today's environment, you've got in many hospitals, it's almost a revolving door of providers. And so you may have somebody that's their first time or first week in an ED, and they're not familiar with the population, and they don't know those what the folks that we lovingly call the frequent flyers. And so would this model be of benefit to particularly those newer and more infrequent providers?
Yeah, I think it benefits in a couple of ways to that group of providers. One is that it takes into account all patient history for so those every patient is treated based off of their historical data, triage data, all of their historical encounters, almost like the personalized admission rate and things like that. All their comorbidities and prior diagnoses are taken into account when Corio looks at a patient's encounter from the time they walk in. The other way in which it can help, maybe more newer physicians is in providing that confidence that when we get a high score for an admission, that is like really likely to be admitted on the hospital side of things, because that negotiation or that just that conversation and coordination between the physicians is a relationship-based conversation. You know who you're talking to, they know who they're talking to, and just helping to facilitate that by providing some consistency across all of the physicians is another way that Corio can benefit EDs in their patient flow.
Okay. So, all right. I would assume, that typically an engagement with Corio is a multi-year, let's say a couple of years. What happens, and how do you adjust your model throughout that process for for say a community that's on a high growth trajectory, and there are many people moving into the community that have not been in the system before, and so therefore you don't have that prior history and prior data that you can use to build this model. So how is the model adapted throughout that
Right.
process?
Well, so because we've sort of streamlined this training process on that data that we do before we actually do a in a hospital system, we continue to update the model as time goes on, and we can retrain the model on a seasonal basis to account for any variations, any changes to the procedures, and adapt to those dynamically. And that's where we can help hospitals, because by providing this as a service, we keep the model updated and up to date with any changes in your data environment, and it adapts as your hospital adapts and flows. It's not just a one size fits all, but it's a model that learns and adapts over time, and we keep it up to date at each hospital. So yeah, I think that reflects this partnership that we have, that we want to serve each hospital individually to their needs, right? And as those needs change, Corio needs to adapt to accommodate them.
Okay. So what about, say, my hospital is working with Corio in midstream. We have a massive massive change in our lab department or imaging department that greatly impacts the ED. How is that incorporated into the model?
So if you've changed the way labs are represented, or maybe there's a turnaround time these are things that Corio will read those labs and respond to them minute by minute, right? So we look at all of the labs as they're entered. So any improvement in the turnaround time for radiology or labs, that will automatically be reflected in the time savings that Corio provides as far as their notifications are concerned, because the model uses all of those clinical data points that flow in, and looks at every patient minute by minute as the data arrives for them. So if all that stuff improves or inputs to the model, then the indicators also improve as well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes good sense, because that I mean that's a real world example in for me, because middle of the year our hospital made some significant changes to our MRI, actually adding AI software that greatly reduced scan times, and so that's certainly going to impact overall throughput. So what kind of successes have you seen in the hospitals that you're working with, and talk a little bit about that, because again, whenever I first met you guys, I'm like, you are addressing a problem that I have on a regular basis. But in today's limited capital environment in healthcare, we have to prioritize where those funds are spent. So while I think I would think this is a great tool for me to use into my ED, how can I justify that with, say, my CFO, my finance committee, or whatever?
So the end-to-end metrics are the ones that are the most challenging to impact, right? Those are the ones that are like floor-to-floor time, and those are areas that are very hospital specific, and the barriers to activating them all are vary from hospital to hospital, right? Where we are experiencing measurable improvement with Corio is in that door to decision time. So we're able to get to that decision much earlier than without Corio. And we do that analysis when we go into the hospitals to show them, here's the before, here's your baseline, and how Corio is impacting that. And so we're very transparent about, the impact that we're having. So that's the big benefit where we're seeing right now, is that that we're able to influence the confidence of saying yes, it's ready for the hospitalist to admit this person, right? So that's the main benefit we're seeing currently. We also identified the downstream workflow aspects that continue to be the bottlenecks, and then we look at what parts of those can be brought forward into that process and can respond to the anticipated decision to admit. So it's a very stepwise process. It's not just a tool. I think that's where a lot of technology folks sort of leave it, is they say, here's a tool, you figure out how to use it. But it's a tool that we put in the hands of people when we collaborate with them to work through those workflows and help to identify where, the barriers are that are slowing their inpatient admission or their discharge process from the ED.
Okay. Well, and I can see it also being of great help in disease-specific areas. Particularly, I'm thinking about stroke care. The metrics are in and around stroke care, looking at door-to-doc time, door-to-needle time, things like that. And so I'm sure that this would be a great tool to analyze that and to also provide improvements in and around that. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think, in every case where we're asking the docs to respond, like very, and it's like they have to be extremely responsive, and the teams around them have to have that bandwidth. Anything you can do to reduce the cognitive burden or the loads that are taking away from that capacity results in faster turnaround times, even if, the specific, stroke case, right? That they need to have the bandwidth to be able to respond very quickly. And by getting the bulk of the patients that are clogging up the ED that are, that can just bring that capacity up for them, gives them the ability to respond to those things and improve those metrics that you talked about.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah. That is yet another thing that we as operators have to think about across the ED spectrum. Okay, so I think we talked a lot about ED throughput, but Mitch, as we were talking before we went on air, you're by far the most experienced AI MLM person that I've had on my show. So talk to me a little bit about where you see the future of AI and MLM going in healthcare, because I've had the luxury of talking to a number of different startups and young companies over the last few months, and it's amazing, how there is that AI MLM aspect in virtually everything. So talk to me a little bit about kind of your thoughts on what the future holds for us.
Yeah, that's a pretty big question, Kevin.
It is a big question, sure.
I think there's so much potential. I think, so I've been doing this type of work for going on 20 years now. And that lends itself to being really pragmatic about its application, right? I tend not to chase and sort of chase the shiny objects, but really look at have durable value. And I think in cases where we're able to lower the cognitive load or the and like allow physicians and their teams to deliver their best care to patients is where AI can have the most benefit immediately. I think there are some really outstanding results for detecting things that that needle in the haystack, that no the tumor that no patient, no physician could see on a scan that might develop in 5 years. But in reality, there's not a realistic treatment protocol for those types of things. It's like, what do you do? We don't have a good you don't know how to do it.
Yeah, we found it now what?
Right.
Yeah.
And so those things, while they may seem magical and science fiction, it will take a lot of time for those protocols to develop, right? And I think that's where the far-flung future is, but it's not here and now. The things that can help here and now are the things that are currently burdening the teams, right? And I think being having AI models that are more assistive, that get the hay out of the way, so do the laundry so you can do the art, not do the art so you can do the laundry. And I think that's sort of the philosophy behind Corio. It takes a while to find those things, right? And it's the ED is by far the most challenging aspect of a dynamic area to operate in from a time constraint and just a sheer volume perspective. And so we probably didn't pick the easiest place to focus on first, but that's where we found the most opportunity. I think there are a lot of applications on the inpatient discharge and length of stay and readmission avoidance things that are showing a lot of promise. I think as we move towards from these predictive models, coupling them with the language models to sort of provide a better concise summary so that we can give the physicians a better gestalt of the patient and incorporate their full history. Those are ways that we can use those to assist and provide improve healthcare and the delivery of care overall.
Very good. Okay. So, Mitch, in the few minutes we have left, if somebody who's listening today wants to hear more about Corio, how can they do that?
Well, the first place would be, you can either email me or you could go to our website, corio-ed.com, where it gives a pretty comprehensive overview of where we are, how we got here, the problems that we see that we can help with. And so that would probably be the main resource to go to learn more about it. And from there, we're happy to schedule in-person demos or online demos where we can answer questions about your particular setting and see how it could benefit your hospital or system.
Okay, great. Mitch, I really appreciate having you on today. You were able to enlighten me and hopefully the audience on just an amazing new frontier in healthcare. So thanks for that. Mitch Quinn with Corio ED. Hopefully like you or like I did today, hopefully that you were able to pick up a little bit about what can be done to improve ED throughput, but also figure out a little bit more about what the future holds for AI and its application in healthcare. So, with that, I'm Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me again today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Take care, and we'll see you next time.